I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Wrestling fans, it is ICF Jew, the best Jew in the world, here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews right here on the Absolution Network. I am your primetime host, the best Jew in the world, CM Jew. And on this episode, episode 54, we continue our look. In our month-long look at SummerSlam, as we travel back to 1998, at the height of the Attitude Era, to watch SummerSlam 1998, a SummerSlam that gave us a hair-versus-hair match between X-Pac and Jeff Jarrett, gave us the Lion's Den between Ken Shamrock and Owen Hart, it gave us a ladder match for the Intercontinental title between The Rock and Triple H, and it gave us, for the World Heavyweight Championship, Stone Cold Steve Austin versus The Undertaker. All this and more on this wonderful, wonderful episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. Now, as I am recording this on Saturday, hours before the events start happening at the Barclays Center, and of course even more hours before the actual start of NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, because somebody better call Crime Time and tell them to check their 40s and roll their whatevers, because I've forgotten. I could probably bring it up, but bit too lazy. But more importantly, we are literally a day away from the biggest party of the summer, SummerSlam. And, last episode I went over the card for NXT TakeOver, which has pretty much stayed the same. Everything that's happening is happening on that card, everything we guessed. The only thing that we've been revealed is that next Wednesday, NXT will be a special hour and a half long special featuring more matches from the Barclays Center, the said aforementioned matches that will take place before TakeOver. This includes a Fatal 4-Way between between Becky Lynch, Charlotte, Dana Brooke, and Emma. You have the return of Bull Dempsey. Eva Marie will face Carmella. And of course you have a 8-man tag where the Hype Bros will team with Enzo and Cassidy and Enzo and Cass, excuse me, to face the team of the Wreckers, which is Scott Dawson, I'm blanking their names, and I hate that because they are actually a good team, and their finishing move, which is a pop up into a code breaker, is that's a good finisher. And speaking of good finishers, Chad Gable, damn it, I'm blanking on names tonight. And his tag team partner, which set up, which they're a very good tag team, and I should remember their name. So I'm actually looking forward to that, and that's just some of the matches. I'm sure there's going to be more. I'm sure there's going to be something to do, a lot of setting up, maybe even some more debuts. But, yeah, that's happening tonight. But, you know, since last week I went over NXT TakeOver, I thought this week I'd run down the card for this week's, for tomorrow's SummerSlam. So let's see on the card, and again, I'm going completely off memory. I have no notes in front of me, so I apologize. I probably should, but you know. Hey, dude, leave notes! I'm a man, I could do it without notes! One of the more recently added matches, we have, Sami Zayn, but we have Dolph Ziggler versus Rusev. In we know it won't end the feud, but there's always hoping that it would. But a match has basically been delayed for 2 months because, you know, Dolph Ziggler has to go make a movie. It should be good. Dolph Ziggler is always fun to watch in the ring. And, you know, Rusev finally having a good opponent to wrestle with. You know, here's the thing. We know Rusev can wrestle when he's putting good opponents. Just look at the triple threat match he had with Cesaro and Kevin Owens. That's just proof of it. I do believe you're going to have Sheamus versus Randy Orton once again. Because it's not like we didn't see that match at Battleground. But, you know, their rivalry and they're continuing to feud with each other and it will continue on and it's something for both wrestlers to do. I'm honestly not expecting a lot from this match. Quite frankly, there's an expectation of mine for this just because of the way it's built and everything for it to be the worst match of the night. Which I hate saying because Randy Orton is a good wrestler. But at the same time, Sheamus is a good brawler. But at the same point in time, every time I see on the marquee, Randy Orton versus Sheamus, all I can do is think back to the night after WrestleMania 29. When it was Sheamus versus Randy Orton. And that crowd. Wait a minute. Where's SummerSlam? Oh, that's right. It's New York. And where did that Raw take place? In New York, New Jersey. At the Izod Center, where this year's SummerSlam was supposed to happen. Oh, it's going to be the night after WrestleMania 29 all over again. Because I don't think I said this about the NXT TakeOver last week, but it's true to be said about tonight. Again, because as of this recording, and hopefully as of this release, tonight, and for tomorrow night, it's a New York crowd. You know, a New York crowd will tell you exactly what it thinks of you. I actually like the New York crowd over the Chicago crowd, because the Chicago crowd is ruling, but the Chicago crowd has one goal in mind, and that's to do whatever is the complete and utter opposite of what you want them to do. It's not really that they're unruly and that they really have any opinion about wrestling. It's that they're just like to be, you know, we're different. New York, on the other hand, they have no time to deal with your bullshit. They will tell you exactly how they feel, and they have no problem telling you it. And I'll sit here and say this. If people were offended by how Minnesota handled the whole, you know, Divas match and chanting Brock Lesnar's name, which, okay, let's all be honest completely about something. You can talk about booking, you can talk about everything. It was the hometown wanting their hometown hero. Can we just leave it at that and be done with it? Do we have to make a big deal out of it? You can be offended and upset and everything you want. It's the hometown crowd wanting their hometown hero. After hours and hours of waiting. That would be true for any place, I think. That being said, if it had been New York, though, oh, they never would have left that arena alive. So just be happy it was Minnesota. But yeah, so Sheamus versus Randy Orton. Why do I have a feeling we're going to have a repeat of the night after WrestleMania 29? I should say the Raw that happened after WrestleMania 29. In a match that, speaking of the New York crowd, and speaking of them losing their god-forsaking minds, Kevin Owens versus Cesaro. Or as I like to call this match, the Ring of Honor entry into the SummerSlam event, because that's what it is. I'm like, that crowd is going to be into that match. That crowd is going to be tearing that match up. I cannot wait for... First of all, Owens, Cesaro, we have seen glimpses. It is going to be amazing. Two of the best Ring of Honor has ever produced going at it and just... It's going to be amazing. Cesaro has just been on a tear. Ever since those two matches with Cena and Cena putting his stamp of approval on him, he has just been, it's just been getting great. It's like, okay, Vince, you wanted your it factor? There's your it factor right there. And thankfully, people seem to be noticing it. And Owens is just the best goddamn heel in the business right now. Plain and simple, and I know that makes my friend Matty J very, very happy about his hometown boy. And he should be, because Kevin Owens is the best goddamn heel in the business. And it doesn't matter his weight size, by the way. Everyone make a comment about the fat Owens fat. It's like, yes, he's rotund. It's an insult. Do we really have to make a big deal out of this? Anyways. I mean, Owens and Cesaro, they're going to tear it up. But what's going to make this match over the top is the crowd. That crowd is going to be going nuts with this match. You have the Divas Elimination match. Where it's going to be Team PCB, Paige, Charlotte, and Becky versus Team Bella, the Bella Twins, Nikki and Brie, and Alicia Fox versus Team Bad, Sasha Banks, Naomi, and Jimmy Superfly Snuka, daughter Tamina. I had to remember that for a moment. Team Bad. In a three-team elimination match. This should be fun, and I think it's going to be a great showcase for this new Divas Revolution. So I'm very much looking forward to it. I would like to see Charlotte win, because again, you can set up that whole Charlotte going after the title. And you can build towards that. May build towards her winning it at Survivor Series. Would be a good build up to it. And I know that that's like still like 3 months away, but you have a good build up to getting the title, which would pay off for this Divas Revolution. So I am very much looking forward to this match. It's going to be a good showcase. And I like I said, I think Charlotte's going to get the deciding pinfall. Speaking of matches that have curses around them, And I say that because, you know, I say that, but you know, every time we think the Divas division is going to, you know, take off, there's something seems to stop it. And we have another thing that's like that. It's called the Intercontinental title, which has been cursed this year. You know, as Matty J brought it up, Bad News Barrett, Dolph Ziggler, Daniel Bryan, Ryback. Yeah, the Intercontinental title, triple threat, Ryback versus Big Show versus The Miz. The match that was supposed to take place at Battleground, if I remember, that didn't. Because, you know, Ryback got a staff infection, especially after CM Punk. Yeah, they gonna take care of that staff infection. And no and if or buts about that. And I'm sure when he comes out, the New York crowd's gonna be going, "Where's my Z-Pack? Where's my Z-Pack?" Which make a certain C and an M and a Punk happy. Go fucking, huh? But no, this is gonna be an interesting match. By no means is this gonna be a match of the night candidate, I think. But it definitely has the advantage of being a fun. Overall, Miz is good as a heel. He's good enough as a heel. He's got a great mouth. His whole point is to annoy the hell out of you. And he does that very, very well. I think a lot of people are just disappointed at him because, you know, you had Ric Flair bestow the figure four leg lock to him. And it took him nowhere. Big Show adds a decent dimension to the match. And, you know, in general, it should be fun. I don't think it's going to be awful. I just think it's going to be fun. But again, it's... If you're looking for a match that's going to be your piss break for the night, considering that it's a four-hour event, this is it. Now, a match that will not be the piss break is the Tag Team Championship match, the four-team match, where the primetime players, defending champions, defend against the New Day versus Los Matadors. And, of course, the team I'm picking to win, Lucha, 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 the Lucha Dragons of Kalisto and Sin Cara. And I call this one Sin Cara because at least this Sin Cara doesn't botch like Mr. C's does. Which, by the way, since we're on the subject, I got to see, through various means, the Triple Mania main event between Mysterio and Mr. C's. Mysterio was great. Mr. C's still botches like a motherfucker. Okay, you know, Triple H can't be right on everything, folks. And I'm not saying he's a bad talent. He's just botchy as hell. It's like, can't he do the 619 right? He did it with one leg. And that finish, out of nowhere, and then the remaining 20 minutes, which was just the... What is it about Lucha Libre? Just like I've seen it several times at Triple Mania. It's like it just doesn't make sense. It really doesn't to me. The pageantry was there, but it's like by the end of the match, I was left with my head scratching. Like, and that being said, Hugo's defending match and Matt Stryker were just absolutely excellent. Excellent on commentary, by the way. WWE needs to bring back Matt Stryker back now. They need to bring him back yesterday. Can't you imagine it? JBL and Matt Stryker on color commentary. You know, with Matt Stryker calling out the moves. It's like, oh my god, that would be awesome. But anyways, this tag team, I can't wait. Because obviously I'm hoping, I'm praying that the Lucha Dragons will win the title. But it will be fun. It will be fun to see Kalisto fly around. It will be fun to see all the luchadors fly around. And, you know, in general, you just got four good tag teams that are all entertaining. Los Matadores, you know, are probably going to be the team that takes the fall. But you got Kalisto, who's just amazing. And, you know, I can see that his stock is definitely rising. And he's being given another big-time spot to shine on one of the grandest stages that WWE has in SummerSlam. You got the primetime players who are millions of dollars, millions of dollars, millions of dollars. And, of course, you've got New Day Rocks. New Day Rocks. New Day Rocks. As villains. And just, by God, somebody give Kofi Kingston, Xavier Woods, and Big E a raise, because they took a gimmick that no one was into at all, and they turned it around. I mean, Big E's dancing, his pep popping, Xavier Woods when he's talking, and more importantly, Kofi Kingston. Every time he comes, like, it's like, oh my God, I cannot stop laughing. So yeah, I'm very much looking to the fast-paced action of the tag team title match. And if, fingers crossed, if it goes right, hopefully your new tag team champions will be the Lucha, 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 Lucha Dragons. Now moving on to our double main event, and there may be some other surprises. There's talk of The Rock and somebody else coming. We will see. I'm sure The Rock will be coming, because I really do believe that ultimately will be The Rock versus Triple H at WrestleMania 32, because that is the one event they've not fought at, and this will definitely be them setting it up. But our first main event, and which I think will be the, not the main event. Obviously, I think the main event will be Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker, because it's getting top billing. So the first main event that will go off will definitely be for the World Heavyweight Championship, or I should say the title versus title match for the World Heavyweight Championship and the WWE United States Championship, as John Cena, and his name is John Cena, versus Seth, you can't see me, Rollins. I am very much looking forward to this match. I thought they put on a terrific match on Raw, and that was on Raw. I can only imagine the match they are going to have on a pay-per-view. I think we saw glimpses of this way back in January when it was Cena, Rollins, and Brock Lesnar in a triple threat. I cannot wait for this, and considering how much John Cena's repertoire has evolved, I'm like, woo-hoo! The question isn't, will Cena do a new move? It's, what the hell type of new move is Cena gonna bust out now? It's like, I can't wait. There's so many ways to call this match. More than likely, it's gonna be a gimmicky finish. Something maybe where both keep their titles. I was reading JR's blog saying that he thinks, you know, Seth needs to keep the title. But I go by my opinion that I think, depending on what they want to go with the future, with possibly bringing Daniel Bryan back at the Royal Rumble, and, you know, again, there's no, but you need a face to be title holder for a cash-in, because, again, I think it's all going to lead to Sheamus versus Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 32. So, and it may not happen here, it may happen down the line, but, yeah. I would love to see John Cena win it. I would love to see him tie Ric Flair's record. Yeah, I'm a C-Nazi, and I don't care. So, yeah, I'm very, very much looking forward to that. I think it's going to be an excellent match. Seth Rollins is he is the future. And this is another platform for him to shine. And it's really his first proper platform since Money in the Bank and but really big time 101 contest. You know, as great as his matches with Dean Ambrose have been, I don't think he's really had that opportunity to shine. And as I say in between yawning, it's been a long day for me, folks. But I really think that he's going to shine on this platform. And John Cena, I think, will just, again, put some more, just do more to cement his legacy as one of the best wrestlers in the WWE history. And I really think that, though. So it's going to be an excellent main event, and I can't wait to watch it. And then, of course, you have our main event, Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker. Now, this is going to be a brawl, and there are so many ways to talk about this. It's going to be entertaining. Who wins, though? I think it's a question to Lesnar, the Undertaker. I actually do have a fascinating theory, because there's a lot of talk, a lot more than usual, about Stone Cold Steve Austin being at SummerSlam. Alright, and that got me thinking. Well, you know, Stone Cold and Undertaker are friends. You know, what if, you know, Paul Heyman had gotten under Stone Cold's skin enough, or something happened backstage with Stone Cold, that during the match, Stone Cold comes out, as Brock Lesnar's about to give the F5, kick to the gut, stunner, Taker picks him up, puts the tombstone on him, 1, 2, 3. I'm telling you, it may not happen that way, it may be further down the line, but I can feel it. I can feel Lesnar Austin. You want to talk about something that will sell out. Sell out. Jerry Jones Land in Dallas in March. Austin Lesnar. That's just my theory how it's going to go down. But I think it's going to be an entertaining match. The crowd's going to be into it. It's just going to be a fun night. That's your card. And it is just going to be awesome. With that being said, let's get into our review, shall we? So let me give you the rundown. Ladies and gentlemen, SummerSlam 1998 took place on August 30th, 1998, to an attendance of 21,588. The theme song was, our associated tagline was Highway to Hell, with the theme song Highway to Hell by AC/DC. It took place in New York City, New York, at the famed Madison Square Garden, and was sponsored by Stridex. Your ring announcer, if I can get to it, see they have it, but they don't have it. But your commentator team was Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. Your backstage commentators included Michael Cole and Michael P.S. Hayes, as a Do Hendrix, or our first name, because I can't remember. Ladies and gentlemen, all that being said, let's get into SummerSlam 1998.
Let go!
back and let's get right into it. Of course, that means we start talking by the matches that we can't talk about. The first match, we actually had three Sunday Night Heat matches. The first one was the tag team of Too Much, a.k.a. Scott Taylor and Brian Christopher, versus LOD 2000, Hawk and Animal. Too Much actually wins this, so that would be very interesting to see from my perspective. The second match was Gangrel versus Dustin Reynolds, the man formerly known as Gold Dust. And then the third one was the Disciples of Apocalypse, 8-Ball and Skull, with Paul Heyring defeating Bradshaw and Vader. Again, all three of those are actually matches I would like to see, for obvious reasons. But again, Sunday Night Heat, and, well, we can't see it. So the first match we have is D'Lo Brown versus Val Venus for the WWF European Championship. And this would actually be our third longest match of the night. This was, I felt, a good opening match. It had great back and forth, and it showcased both wrestlers' talents. Again, you had two wrestlers who were their finishing move basically the same. It was a splash off the top rope, whether it be Val Venus's money shot, which is very Jimmy Superfly Snuka-like, or you had the more of the frog splash that D'Lo Brown emphasized. And, of course, the other thing is you had the chest protector here. So, of course, that came into play. But there was a great back-and-forth battle between it. And I like the way they eventually set up the ending, you know, with the whole referee getting involved and ultimately the referee actually getting involved, net leading to the shove, the attacking of the referee by Val Venus getting him disqualified. Again, it built the story. Usually, with that type of hijinks involved, it can look bad, but here it just actually looked natural and felt right in line with sort of the attitudinal era. And then, of course, you know, Val Venus getting his revenge on the ref, you know, by body slamming him and putting on the money shot. You know, again, just fed into Val Venus's character. So I very much enjoyed that, because I thought it was a good opening match. Again, a great way to start off the event hot, because it was a very competitive match and very enjoyable. Our next match, well, not so much. As the Oddities, this would be the team of Kurgan, Golga, who you might remember as Earthquake, and John Silva, versus with Luna Fashan and the Insane Clown Posse of Violent J and Shaggy 2 Dope. Again, this is, I think, something that would have made more sense if I had watched the Raws beforehand, but basically versus Kaintai, Taka Michinoku, Dick Togo, Men Tohi, and Sho Funaki in a 3-on-4 tag team match, of course, then with Yamaguchi-san. This was a short... This should have been a short match, but like everything was built up to the fun of the Oddities. Which I just, again, was a group of people who were built upon like that they look strange, mostly because they were tall and big. Of course, I think Blue Meanie was in there too. But yeah, he's big too, though. Big in a different way. It was actually quite entertaining just watching, you know, all these little Japanese wrestlers trying to... It was a great showcase of the strength of the big wrestlers. I mean, the only downfall of that is that these four Japanese wrestlers are all good wrestlers. I mean, Taka Michinoku in particular is, you know, now legendary status among Japanese wrestlers. Still wrestles as part of New Japan. He was there for Wrestle Kingdom 9, which I can't watch anymore because somebody deleted it. You know when you have relatives come over to your house and you tell them don't do stuff and they do stuff? like your grandmother. And you just want to throw him out the freaking window. If anybody has Wrestle Kingdom 9 on tape, please send it to me. Yeah. Now I'm sad. Anyways, it was an amusing match. The match was all about comedy, and it ended with this, Kurgan doing a double choke slam, and Giant Silva doing a double choke slam, and getting the win, and Goga covering all four of them. So it was amusing, and it is pretty much the worst match of the night, by far. So, yeah. Our next match, however, though, does not disappoint, and is very entertaining, as we have X-Pac versus Jeff Jarrett in a hair versus hair match. This match was just action from the get-go. It was very entertaining. I think this was X-Pac and Jeff Jarrett at their peak. Although one could argue Jeff Jarrett's peak would come during the early TNA run as well. Either way, these were two young up-and-coming wrestlers that just put it all out there. And really good show. Just, again, the back and forth, and they told a great story of Jeff Jarrett's egotistical character, who just really has all these skills, but it's just that ego. And, you know, X-Pac, just with all these cruiserweight maneuvers that obviously he had learned from the cruiserweights while being in WCW and bringing over, including that spinning wheel kick and everything. And then, of course, the whole ending. You know, the great thing about Jeff Jarrett's guitar is, as much as you hate him using it over and over again to win matches, it builds up to when it doesn't work. And this is one of those instances. I could tell. And they talked about it through commentary, and this is one of the reasons Jim Ross is one of the best commentators out there, bringing up that story of him using the guitar to get wins over and over the past couple months. And so, again, with Southern Justice trying to hand him the guitar and hit him with the guitar, missing, X-Pac hitting him, then using the guitar to hit Jeff Jarrett and getting the 1-2-3, just felt like poetic justice. And again, it's part of Jeff Jarrett's gimmick as well. And so, I thought the ending was right on point. And, you know, obviously this is where Jeff Jarrett got his hair cut and where his hairstyle changed. Now, our next match was a fun match to watch. As you had Mark Mero and Jacqueline versus Sable. Now, they thought that maybe she'd choose an oddity for her tag team partner. But she didn't. Instead, she chose new up-and-coming and rookie superstar Edge. You think you know me. On this day, I see clearly. Now it is old school Edge coming through the crowd, and my God, Edge looked wonderful in this match against Mark Mero. Like, he just, everything he shows, like, clean and crisp, and just, like, you knew you were seeing a superstar of the future in him here in 1998. And Jacqueline and Sable, my God, they did a great job here. Just entertaining. I mean, Jacqueline looked goddamn hot as hell. You know, Jacqueline may be one of my favorite, if not favorite, female wrestler of all time, because not only is she hot as hell, but goddamn, she is one of the most underrated wrestlers out there. I mean, she could wrestle. She had great power, and I wish WWE would have given her more. I mean, again, it's something we've said before in, like, the bikini contest that we've talked about with her, that whenever she's in a bikini contest, she's going to have the hottest bikini, which means that whoever ultimately wins is not going to be her, and they're going to have to do something that's damn near naked, close to nakedness, i.e. bubble wrap bikini. Because how do you do? But no, great psychology by Jacqueline here as the heel about, you know, could get her hands free, but really didn't want to deal with the wrath and rage of Sable. And again, great. I think a very good job. I think this is very underrated by WWE, that as much as was made about Sable and her beauty and just all the sexy outfits she came out with, she could wrestle. I mean, yeah, she could, for the most part, do a lot of power moves, but at least they put effort in showcasing that she could wrestle. You know, and when you're doing things like the Sable Bomb to a guy, that's a pretty powerful message. And then that TKO was pretty sweet, too. This, overall, was a very fun, enjoyable match. It was a great look at an early Edge match. And, of course, you got to see Sable and Jacqueline. Goddamn, that red and blue. You know, it seen Jacqueline in that outfit, I just kept going, let's get physical, physical. I want to get physical, physical. People of the 80s will know exactly what I'm talking about. Now, our next match is a very, very unique match. It was the Lion's Den match between Ken Shamrock and Owen Hart with Dan Selvin in Owen Hart's corner. Now, the Lion's Den, for all intents and purposes, is a mini octagon. It's basically a UFC cage, except that there's a little octagon and that the cage slants outward rather than it is being straight up. And the referees are at the top. And while I could sit here and say that this is a UFC fight, oh, what the hell, I'll sit here and say this. That's what this is. This is a UFC fight, except that they allow wrestling maneuvers. And I say that because, as we've established, UFC is professional wrestling. So, in all honesty, UFC, you should allow your fighters to do suplexes and that stuff. Because, honestly, in all fairness, this is one of the most entertaining UFC matches I've ever seen. I do think it went a little long. I think this is a match that could have cut 2 minutes or so off, maybe. But, you know, I think I'm being nitpicky there. From start to finish, it was a fun match. Again, that mixture of sort of that UFC with professional wrestling, with the suplexes. You know, again, them being the cage, throwing each other against the cage, throwing each other against the door. Really trying to get each other to submit. And of course, Ken Shamrock showcasing his ability in that cage. You know, there was a point where he, you know, leaps off the cage and throws a punch, and that's great. And then he leaps off the cage and Owen catches him. Those were great maneuvers there. And then ultimately that finish to where it's, you know, Owen Hart, you know, Dan Selvin basically teaches Owen the Dragon Sleeper to use, which is the chokeout. And he tries to lock it into Ken Shamrock, and Shamrock walks up the cage and over Owen Hart. And, you know, again, armbar into the ankle lock. And, you know, he's reaching for, asking for Selvin for help, and Selvin just walks away like, well, it's over. It's like, God damn it, it's over. And then, of course, Owen Hart tapping out. You know what? It was just a great match. I had a lot of fun watching it. Because it was just such an interesting look being, of course, in that upper Madison Square Garden theater. You know, that was something interesting to note with the next match. Because right before the next match, you could see them wheeling away the TVs that they had brought out for the crowd. Or at least for the front row crowd. They couldn't look straight up at the big screen TV that was up above. But, and mind you, that is one thing I want to sit here and say. I really also love the design. Because, again, Madison Square Garden, when they do pay-per-views, a lot of times it's that one little entranceway, so it's not as big of a design. I mean, they've had bigger designs, like, you know, look at WrestleMania 20, for that matter, where they've done different things. But, again, it's usually always shot from a distance where you can see down that one corway. And for most times, that's the entranceway. You've seen this in here. You saw it was like this for Royal Rumble 2008, for that matter, too. So again, these gates that signify the gates of hell. I just love that design to it. But again, Lions and match, very interesting match. Our next match was not, you know, actually I'm very surprised that the match went on 7 minutes 30 seconds, because it didn't seem like that. But you had New Age Outlaws versus Mankind for the WWF Tag Team Championship. The whole point was that Mankind's tag team partner was Kane, and Kane didn't walk out, but just didn't show up. Again, their rivals somehow are tag team champions. And again, this just, I think, continued to build on Mankind's legacy. You know, because again, this was after Hell in a Cell with Taker. And just this built on that legacy of being able to take punishment. And, because he pretty much actually hanged with the Outlaws for a pretty long time. It's actually very interesting. I recently watched one of the last episodes of Raw from 97. It's the one where basically Triple H beats Shawn Michaels for the European title, except he really doesn't. You know, basically, they kind of do their own version of the finger poke of doom to get back at Sergeant Slaughter. But, like, during that Raw, New Age Outlaws had been busting up Dude Love. And Mankind had, switched back from his Dude Love to his Mankind persona. And there's this brawl that they had on that show with New Age Outlaws, where New Age Outlaws eventually lock him in a freezer. So, again, that rivalry between Mankind, New Age Outlaws, and Road Dogg. And, again, I don't give props to JR for telling a very compelling story, in the fact of, like, you know, again, you have New Age Outlaws who are good guys, but they're doing dastardly things. Like, I don't blame the Outlaws, but enough is enough. And of course, the big surprise comes after, you know, they eventually win with a spike pile driver on a title, which, especially after Austin last year, I thought that was outlawed, but I guess not. Or at least not at this point. Anyways, they throw him in the dumpster, and they're celebrating when all of a sudden Kane rises out, and he's got a sledge, and he just, like, drives it down to where Mankind's supposed to be. Gets out and starts, you know, after the Outlaws disappear, and starts wheeling it away. WWE with all your surprises. That brings us to one of our two main events of the evening. As the current Intercontinental Champion, The Rock, the People's Champ, faced D-Generation X, Triple H, in a ladder match for the Intercontinental Championship. Which, of course, this is not the first time that the Intercontinental Championship was decided at SummerSlam in a ladder match, as I believe SummerSlam 94, you had Razor Ramon versus Shawn Michaels. But this was just an absolutely entertaining match. I love this match from start to finish. Fast pace. The action scene never stop. Just, in fact, of the selling. You know, Rock and Triple H just, like, sold the hell out of the match. It's just like everything seems like they hurt. And just really, for that time, I mean, it's hard to think of this match as innovative, considering, you know, after Hardys and Edge and Christian and the Dudleys and the Money in the Banks and everything and all the athleticism that's been put into ladder matches. But for this day and age, this was very innovative, because this really did set up all those things that sort of the more light heavyweights would think of as, oh, I can do that. I can set up a ladder that way. You know, things like with the slingshot outside and the ladder laid across, you know, from the ring to the barrier and everything. And just risk after risk, and just, oh, God. I talk about something like they are acting hurt. They weren't acting hurt. They were hurt. But just, again, just the back and forth, and just the chemistry between them really sold this match. If there's one thing I didn't like, it was the interference. I would have rather have seen a much more cleaner match. But, you know, I guess this may be nitpicking. Because in a way, I did like the fact that, like, you had Mark Henry constantly getting involved. And then, of course, the baby powder. So, trying to decide, you know what, if you're going to get involved, I'm going to get involved. I'm just going to get involved more. And do the low blow that ultimately leads to Triple H getting the win. Which would make it a big night for DX as New Age Outlaws won the title. And X-Pac kept his hair. Oh, by the way, and temporary D-Generation member Howard Finkel, the Fink, got revenge on Jeff Jarrett, who had shaved him bald. Yes, it was around this time that the Fink lost his beautiful full head of hair. But, you know, the match was just great. It was so entertaining. I mean, I actually had to watch it twice because I really wanted to be able to sit there and say, like, why is this match good? And really just the chemistry, the energy coming off from both men. It had this big fight feel to it. And just the drama, even though I knew who was going to win, the drama was still there. And just like, it just felt like this epic contest that you would just watch. And it was just great spots, great storytelling, great chemistry, great selling, all lead to one terrific ladder match. And it definitely earns its spot as one of the best of all time. Considering that really, this is the match that really skyrocketed both Triple H and The Rock off for their big singles pushes. Because really, you know, you saw the evidence of just how big these superstars were. And you could see, like, in the future, they're going to be big. And it wouldn't be that much longer in the future that you'd realize just how big they could be. In particular with The Rock, who would not just become the people's champion, but the corporate champion. That brings us to our main event. Stone Cold Steve Austin versus The Undertaker for the title. And of course, there were a lot of storylines going here. You know, Vince had offered Undertaker a deal. Undertaker didn't take it. Undertaker promised that his brother Kane would not get involved. And there was a whole even a point to where during the match Kane comes out and Undertaker like sends him back. But you know, I just loved this match because again it was just like it was a clash definitely of styles. You definitely could see that Undertaker was starting to evolve his style a little bit because you know he had a flurry of those striking abilities. Again, that he would really, really bring back once he went to American Badass in a couple years. But again, those striking abilities and just, it was striking in power of, sort of brawling and technique. It's sort of that mat wrestler again, that, you know, Stone Cold, you know, there was a reason he was called what was his name when he was initially brought in? The Ringmaster. There's a reason he was called the Ringmaster, because he was a ring technician. And he really is. Great storytelling, great selling by both wrestlers. The thing I love most about it is that, again, that big fight feel. I love when a match has that big fight feel. When, you know, the charisma and enthusiasm coming off the wrestlers just exuberates, and it gives it this big heavyweight fight feel. Like, oh my god, I'm about to see a fight go down, and it felt like a fight, you know, again, the back and forth, they go into the crowd, like, oh my god, no, that crowd's gonna tear them apart, it's a New York crowd. But again, going into the crowd and everything, and coming back, one of the big moments, the leg drop by Taker, Taker chokes out Stone Cold and puts him on the Spanish announce table, cuts up and goes to the top rope by it and leaps and does this leg drop I mean, the table does break, but it doesn't break like it usually does. It's like, it felt like they slid off. It's like, oh, that could have not been a good landing. But it's like, it was an amazing thing to see Taker, like, flying through the air with this leg drop. And Taker had a lot of great moments. The choke slam over the top rope. Like, Austin was on the ring apron, and Taker catches him and lifts him up, and then does kind of like a running choke slam. Really, the only confusion is, they never said that it was no disqualification, but I guess they were letting the rules fly. Because again, that whole ending is, you know, Taker goes for old school, Undertaker gets the cheap shot with the low blow, and he doesn't get disqualified. So I'm just that's the only question is, like, I didn't hear anything to where it was, like, no DQ. But I guess it was, like, referee's decision. I don't know. It's very confusing. It's the one thing that makes that ending confusing. Because if it was no DQ, it makes sense. But again, you know, Taker goes for old school, and as he's coming down, Austin counters with a low blow by basically a straight kick. And then as he turns around, hits the Stone Cold Stunner and gets the 1-2-3. I mean, outside of that confusingness, I did like the ending. Because again, it goes back to Stone Cold's character. And Stone Cold said, look, I'm going to cheap shot the hell out of you. I'm going to do whatever I need to keep this title. And damn sure did Stone Cold keep that promise. And I do also love the visual as the show went off the air to where you had both Kane and Undertaker there looking back at him, of course, setting up, which would eventually come, I think, at the next pay-per-view where it was a triple threat between Kane and Taker. Kane, Taker, and Stone Cold, where Stone Cold would lose the title. But yeah. So it was a great match. It fulfilled its big heavyweight fight feel. So that's it for SummerSlam 1998. Let's start off with top three moments. Number three. That's a real... Because I can think of two right off the bat. As I'm looking at my wrestler, I'm trying to think of a good moment. Definitely, you know what? It has to be Ken Shamrock walking up the cage to escape the Dragon Sleeper and then locking on his own ankle lock submission on... Owen Hart. That was a great finish to that match. Number three. I already did number three. Number two, Undertaker's leg drop. Off the top rope onto Austin through the table. Or should I say sliding off the table. And number one, it definitely comes from the ladder match. So many to choose from. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know what it is? There's a point to where Brock, and I'll do both of them, the sets into their finishers, which is, you know, Rock stops Triple H, and Triple H kicks him off, tries to go for a double sledge, Rock catches him and hits the Rock Bottom, and then in a little bit, Triple H knocks Rock off the ladder, and he lands on the feet, and he goes to get him, kick to the stomach and hits the pedigree. Just that exchange of events, though, that was my top moment because of that match. Because again, just setting everything up. So those are my top three moments. Top three matches. There were a lot of good matches actually on this pay-per-view. You know, for an era that's really not known for its wrestling. You know, at the end of the day, it had really good wrestling in it. But for me, number three, the Lion's Den match between Owen Hart and Ken Shamrock. Number two, was Taker and Austin for the title. I had that great feel to it, but number one definitely was the ladder match. Rock and Triple H, they stole the show. They just, again, so much more. And, you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to which match is more remembered for that pay-per-view? Is it the ladder match, or is it Taker and Austin? And it comes down to the ladder match. And for good reason, just the electricity in that match. And it's like, you know, when you look back at that feud, that's like that key match of that feud. So, yeah, for me, it's Triple H versus The Rock, the ladder match, best match of the night. And as I said, that's a very hard choice because there were so many good matches. You know, the intergender tag match between with Sable and Edge and Mark Merrill and Jacqueline was good. Jarrett and X-Pac were great. D'Lo Brown and Val Venus started the night off hot. You know, even the Mankind New Age Outlaws being a handicap match, again, just built on that Legend of Mankind. The only match I could sit there and say it wasn't a good match was the Oddities versus Kindai, and that was mostly due to the fact that that match was all about its comedy. I mean, the problem comes with the fact that, like, you have the Insane Clown Posse, and they don't really use them. So outside of that, this is, I think, a very enjoyable SummerSlam. It's just a great, I think, snapshot of the Attitude Era at a certain time, and I fully suggest watching it. I give SummerSlam 1998 I give it a 4 out of 5. So, yeah, I highly suggest watching SummerSlam 1998, especially if you want to relive the Attitude Era at its peak. So that is it for this episode of CM Jews Wrestling Reviews. If you have any emails or comments or anything you want to leave the show, remember there are separate ways you can do that. One, you can email us at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also find us on Stitcher and on Facebook at Absolution Network. And don't be afraid to leave a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, while you're there, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes my Tom's Prerogative podcast, my Tom's Toonami D&D, which just has a new episode out, the Intergalactic Graphic Review, Tom's Top 10, and, of course, many others that include Shin Tiger Krill and his wrestling and anime videos, Jan Ramos and his Toku videos, the Anticast with Relic, and many more. And I have so much more coming to the site. Just check out the Absolution Network at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. That, of course, includes Matty J and TWK and the WrestleCast. Michael Bailey and Views from the Lone Box. Spidey Dude and the Clone Saga Chronicles. And, of course, Scott Gardner and 22 Freaks Podcasting Network. And so many others on the sidebar of the site. Check them out. And that is it for this episode of CM Jews Wrestling Reviews. Next week, we will have both our NXT TakeOver and SummerSlam review. I might even get somebody to join me. I don't know. But whether they join me for the main review or not, probably not going to happen, because next week, we are only going 2 years up as we go to SummerSlam 2000. And we're doing it for one match and one match only, because we're going to the night that the Hardys, Edge and Christian, and the Dudleys changed the world again. As we go for TLC with SummerSlam 2000. So, until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I bring me down to negative vibes. I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. and I'm on to feed one me blood down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and to the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of to the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be born in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life, but just dream.